This should do it. Nick Allen waits, and he will squeeze it. And the A's have won back-to-back.
Yep, the A's have won back-to-back games. A's, the worst team in baseball, now 36-90, are 4-1 against the Kansas City Royals. So, and yet the Royals could take 2 out of 3 from the Dodgers. They could push the Mariners. They split with another good team. I forgot who it was. Anyway, the A's are 31-89 against everyone else, but 4-1 against the Royals. A's win again last night over the Royals. Final score there, 5-4. Royals down 2-0 early. Angel Zerpa gave up 4 runs on 4 hits and a walk in 3 innings. And Salvador Perez cut the lead to 5-4 in the fifth with a 2-run single, but that was it. No offense the rest of the way. The only good news you can really take out of this one is that Zach Greinke was back and pitched extremely well out of the bullpen. Gave up just 2 hits in 4 innings, struck out 5 strikeouts. I'll get to in a moment because I've been tracking this and I don't have a good feeling about it. I'll explain in a moment. Here's Matt Cutchero on Zach Greinke and how he played last night and pitched.
He looked sharp. You know, looked like he was back to his normal form. He got a bunch of swing and miss, soft contact. Yeah, like he does. He's always in the zone. So it was a really positive outing for him.
Royals are 40-88. A's are 36-90. They finish up the 3-game series at 2:37 this afternoon. Carl Ragans, who leads the major leagues with 33 strikeouts in the month of August, is on the bump for KC. 4-4 ERA, just north of 4. Getting back to Zach Greinke. Last year we were talking about how could Zach get the 3,000 strikeouts, and we said it's probably doubtful the way he was going early last year. He has 2,960 strikeouts. He needs 40 more for 3,000, which is a huge milestone. But the Royals only have 34 games left in the season. Let's say he goes back in the rotation, which he probably will. Every 5 games you start, if he can go the rest of the way, he may have 6 starts maybe. Maybe yeah. 7, but probably 6. 6, if he strikes out 5... in every start, which he's been only going 4 or 5 innings,
yeah,
he would still be short.
Yeah,
so he's going to end up being probably 10 to 20 strikeouts short of 3,000, or even 10, inside 10. He might be 2,991. I don't think he's coming back next year. I think he's done after this year. But I guess if you're going to chase numbers, that would be a number to chase and come back and get. And it would be so cool if he could get 3,000. And I know this is going to sound selfish, but the Royals have done it before. Last year, they would rest Bobby Witt Jr., but they wouldn't rest Whit Merrifield because he had the streak going on. The Royals have not much to be positive about. Recently, the offense has been better, but they're 40-88, for God's sake. And why not, if Greinke, if they would know this is it for Greinke, this is last year, why not do as much as you can to get him to 3,000 Ks?
Yeah.
And who cares if the Royals lose a couple more games because of that? It sounds silly because you're supposed to win, right? But this team's going nowhere this year. And wouldn't that be a great feel-good moment if he could get his 3,000th K at Kauffman Stadium and be his final year in his career and with the Royals and get 3,000 Ks? I mean, it's doable if he gets enough innings. And, of course, he's had to go on the IL a couple times, which maybe it killed his chances of getting the 3,000. But
definitely hurt it.
Oh, man. But he did strike out 5 last night in 4 innings. So maybe they just make him a starter but not a starter type of thing. You know, have an opener and then come in and go. But he's really goes through the lineup 2 times. That's it. He gets a 3rd time through the lineup. They start hitting him hard. And if you only go through a lineup twice, that means you're going to face 18 batters and you give up, say, 6 hits. And, you know, you're trying to get outs and you might get 3-4 strikeouts a game. So I think he's going to fall short. But I'd be okay if the Royals, I don't care if you sacrifice a few games, selfishly get Greinke his 3,000 Ks. Let's do it, man.
Oh, yeah. And obviously, I don't know how much that means to him. He's going to have something to say.
He'll tell you it won't matter.
He'll tell you it won't matter, but I'm sure it does. And so I don't know why he would be against it if the Royals would want to try to get him there, right? I think it's something that they can and should actually focus on here as the season ends if there's a possibility for him to get there. And so, because, like you said, there's not a whole lot of positives right now. You know, Bobby Witt Jr. is hot right now, and we're talking about that. But otherwise, there's not really a lot individually going on that we're talking about. So, and there's obviously not a lot with the team going on. So this is a perfect opportunity to get some excitement around him and around the clubhouse. Just, you know, just for somebody to be pulling for something.
Now, Zach said, I'm coming back next year and the Royals want him back. Then,
yeah.
It's no big deal.
Yeah.
We'll get to the Yankees, which I'm excited about for the first time in a while. But fall sports, the Heat causing some issues or at least changing schedules.
Yeah, both Osborne and Beloit tennis teams were supposed to open their seasons tomorrow. Osborne varsity at Turrigo and Beloit junior varsity at Ellsworth. Both of those meets have been moved. Osborne will be on Saturday. And then the Bullet JV matches at Ellsworth have been moved to Monday. So, yeah, it's definitely changing things. Very, very smart to move those if you have the opportunity, especially early in the season when you're not worried about finding dates, right? And so they'll move those, and they'll have some football jamborees on Friday. Look like they're all still scheduled from what I've seen, and I'll go through that schedule later this week. And then, yeah, a lot of MPL volleyball teams are going to be opening up the seasons on Friday as well. I'm going to hopefully talk with some tennis coaches tomorrow anyway, even though that their stuff has been moved, because that's kind of the trajectory that I was going to go in. So yeah, we'll see if we can get some coaches on and start previewing the seasons and get ready for next week. Next Friday night will be the opening night of high school football season.
A few volleyball jamborees too, not just football. And then the pool play brackets came out for the Hayes tournament on Saturday at Beloit's going to be, and they're going to play some big schools out there. Olathe, I think, West and Salina South and Colby, so that'd be good competition. That's what's in Beloit's pool coming up on Saturday. All latest local information sports-wise, go to ncksports.com.
Runner on the move. Ground ball, Vargas! He's got it! So do the Nats! The red-hot Nats use the home run ball and brilliant pitching to come into the Bronx and beat the Yankees.
Nationals are one of the best teams in the National League here the last 3 weeks. They're starting to figure some things out. They're a young team. They kind of tore it all down, trying to rebuild. Why is it that every team in the big leagues can tear it down, rebuild it, and the Royals can't do it in 8 years?
Yeah.
But anyway, the Nationals win. The Yankees lost their 9th in a row. Boo-hoo-hoo. They lost to the Nationals 2-1. They're now 60-65 on the season, the 9-game losing streak, the longest for the Yankees since 1982, when I was 6 years young. The Yankees are also approaching their biggest losing streak in franchise history, and I say go for it.
Yeah.
The longest one is 12. I say go ahead and get 13. Get the Baker's dozen. We're pulling for you. The Baker's dozen. I would be cool with that. So the Yankees pretty much toast when it comes to playoff time, you would imagine. And this is kind of interesting. Yesterday or last night, Justin Verlander is back with the Houston Astros, and they're taking on the Red Sox. And Alex Cora got upset at Justin Verlander for trying to fix his pitch comm. And this was posted on Twitter. Alex Cora's got a lot of nerve getting upset at Justin Verlander for trying to fix his pitch comm, considering Cora is the reason we need pitch comm in the first place.
Yeah.
Because he's one of those that cheated and took signs and so forth and so on. And I found that kind of ironic. But I thought that was an interesting point that was thrown out there. Sometimes people kind of forget those things. WNBA history last night.
There was contact made enough to call a foul there. Doesn't matter. The 50 bucket is in the books.
Asia Wilson with us, the third WNBA player to score 50 in a game. She had 53, ties the record held by Liz Cambage of the Wings back in 2018. She was 20-21 from the line, 16-20 for the three from the floor. The Aces, the best record in the WNBA. They win 112-100 over the Dream last night. It's time for K-State in Focus. Our focus on Kansas State athletics, brought to you by Heineken Electric in Beloit and by Hanson Auction Realty in Beloit. All right, so K-State in Focus, the K-State volleyball team. It's going to be a special night coming up on Friday, September 1st, next Friday night, as K-State fans are invited to attend a special ribbon-cutting ceremony to formally dedicate and open the Morgan Family Arena and Morris Family Olympic Training Center prior to the Wildcats' home opener against Omaha. That's next Friday there in Manhattan on September the 1st. So you could go to that, and then you could go to the football game, the season opener, Saturday night at 6 o'clock, next Saturday, September 2nd, against Southeast Missouri. It is a stripe out. It's Ahern Fund Member Day as well. That'll be the season opener for K-State. State as they take on SEMO, if that's how you want to say it. And Chris Klieman had a press conference yesterday, said that camp went pretty well, and looking forward to next week when they'll pour all their attention into SEMO. And, of course, there's a lot of returners that are back, and noteworthy, of course, is Cooper Beebe on offensive line. A lot of experience back on offensive line led by Cooper Beebe. Will Howard, of course, many people say he's going to take another step forward this year, and he looked great the last half of last year. And Wyatt Thompson told us one of the concerns he had was wide receiver, but he thought it would all work out. Keegan Johnson's getting rave reviews so far. RJ Garcia had a big catch in the Big 12 title game last year. I think he'll be a good player. And then I think, you know, the backfield, I think, is going to be very good, even without Deuce Vaughn, who had another touchdown the other night in preseason for the Cowboys. Trayshawn Ward and DJ Giddens are splitting time in the backfield. Some people think Trayshawn Ward's going to have a monster year. So, and, you know, Ben Sinnott, a tight end, is a good weapon. You know, we talk about receivers, but tight ends are receivers too. And so I think, to me, offensively, K-State should be really good. I think they really should be good, even with, you know, some inexperience at wide receiver. I think the defense is the biggest issue or the biggest question because of some of the talent they lost. Obviously, a first-round draft pick, a second-round draft pick, they do have some talent to replace.
Absolutely, yeah. Those are the two top guys, obviously, on the list that they need to replace are Andy Dikeizama and Julius Brent. So, you know, you got to find guys that can step into those roles, and that's what you do every year, right? You hope Khalid Duke is healthy. You hope Daniel Green have a whole healthy season at linebacker for you, and you can kind of shift some of the attention there and have those guys have standout years. I mean, this is the case all the time in college, high school football too, right? You got to find guys to replace the guys that you've lost, and I am definitely more concerned about the defense just based on the fact that we don't know a lot about the skill players in some places on the offense, but like you said, the entire offensive line is back, and if you have those guys up front that can take care of the initial part of it for you, you're going to definitely have a better chance, no matter who the skill players are, to have success on that side of the ball. But yeah, it is going to be interesting to see who they can get on the edge to replace Felix and in the secondary. You know, that was one of the issues they had a couple years back, was they just didn't have a deep secondary. So, and I know that I was kind of worried about defensive line going into last year, and then I found out, oh, we're a lot deeper than I thought there. And so maybe that's going to be the case with the defensive backfield this year, right? Like, maybe I'm worried about it, but they're going to have plenty of different guys that can come in and do a lot of things. So, you know, you just never know. I think you're set solid at linebacker with Austin Moore and Daniel Green as your anchors, but there are some places that will be interesting to look at and see where they're at on defense this year.
Yeah, absolutely. So exciting times for K-State Athletics. Certainly this year could be big, as we talked about before. The football team, the volleyball team with a new coach, a new arena, the men's basketball team, certainly high expectations again. The women's basketball team should be a top 25 team when the season begins. They're loaded on paper. They can stay healthy. And then the baseball team should have been in the NCAA tournament last year. So it's a pretty good time to be a Wildcat.
Yeah, absolutely. I've been excited. And, yeah, there was a little bit of damper during women's basketball last year, but otherwise it's been pretty exciting for almost everything at K-State.
Yep, absolutely. K-State in Focus brought to you as always by Heineken Electric in Beloit and by Hanson Auction Realty in Beloit. So Netflix has a new docuseries. It's Swamp Kings, about Florida football from 2005 to 2010, Urban Meyer being the coach. Have you watched any of it yet?
I have not. I've not heard good things about it, to be honest with you.
I've watched the first two episodes. It's been fine so far, but it did seem to me, and I didn't follow Florida football that closely during that time. I knew they had lots of issues eventually with off the field stuff. Of course, Aaron Hernandez is the first thing that pops in your head. and through the first two episodes, there hasn't been anything other than they work really hard and he works them to death. I won't give everything away because you haven't watched it. But
yeah, I've read some tweets about a lot of it already, so you're not probably going to give much
been,
away.
I felt this way, and then I saw this today on social media, and it confirmed what I thought. But I was like, Urban Meyer is a very worried about himself person, okay? And I think he has a gigantic ego. And we know what happened in Jacksonville with the Jaguars and how that just absolutely was a train wreck of a hire. And I was thinking, when I heard that this docuseries is coming out, Florida football, I'm like, Urban Meyer signed off on this? And then I heard he was in it, and I'm like, this has to be watered down. That was my thought.
Yeah.
So the first two or two episodes, the first episode, I'm okay with, you know, they're setting everything, blah, blah, blah. Second episode, okay, interesting, so forth and so on. And then it'll get in the third episode with the tease, it's starting to get into some of the issues off the field. I have not watched all of it. There's two more episodes, I believe, four total. But this is a person that put out here, okay, I finished binge watching Swamp Kings on Netflix. Disappointing. Just off the top of my head, things omitted from the documentary include any mention of Aaron Hernandez besides Tebow taking blame for the 07 bar fight. That's like one of the biggest things I want to know about in this docuseries.
Yeah.
Anything about the Pouncey twins. Cam Newton's stolen laptop, not addressed in this docuseries. Percy Harvin attacking a wide receiver coach, not even brought up apparently. Carlos Dunlap arrested before the SEC championship game in 09, apparently not even covered. I don't know for sure. I haven't seen the next two episodes, yeah. But I'll trust this person. Shelly Meyer's 911 call and Urban Meyer going to hospital with chest pains. How is that left out? Like, why shouldn't that be in there? The entire 2010 season, including Urban Meyer versus reporter Jeremy Fowler's confrontation in practice, Chris Rainey threatening to kill his girlfriend. All of this is left out. Jeffrey Parson, Wichita, says Urban is a fraud. So as soon as I saw he was willing and part of it, knew it would be all spin, he approved. And I think that's exactly what's happening.
Yeah, it's everything I've heard from even people that I know that have watched it or what I've seen on Netflix or on Twitter, I mean, has been... It's basically a Florida fluff piece. It's like we're talking about all the good things that happened while Urban Meyer was there, and we're just giving you the history of all the wins and everything that they did, basically, is what I've heard from a lot of people, right? And it's like, why does that need to be a four-part series?
Right.
If that's all you're going to do, right? Like, now, Aaron Hernandez, there's a separate Netflix documentary about Aaron Hernandez. You can go watch that. Killer Inside, I think is what it's called. But, like, you can watch, like, there's a lot of stuff out there about Aaron Hernandez if you want to find out about it, right?
Right.
But a lot of that other stuff that's just basically based on Florida football and not something that extends off of Florida football should be in here.
Yes.
I mean, that's all part of it. And... I want the whole story if I'm watching something like that, right?
Listen, this series could be 10 episodes. And you could go in depth on some of these things. They could be an episode within an episode, for crying out loud, or episode within the docuseries. And here's the thing for me. Like, what did Netflix think Urban Meyer had to be on camera for this to sell? Because no. This is my thought. Like, right away, my thought is, why did Urban Meyer have to even be in this thing?
Yeah.
You know what?
Because how many, the right story.
Because how many times Michael Jordan's The Last Dance, he approved a lot of stuff. And there was other stuff that was unflattering towards Jordan that was left out of that. Mm-hmm. Now, people that love Jordan don't care. But there were things that were left out. They really totally, I mean, they pretty much avoided the gambling part. That's
for sure.
But they knew they needed Jordan to be on camera for the docuseries.
Yeah,
but do
that.
You need Urban Meyer to be on camera for the Florida docuseries? I don't think you do. And so if it was Netflix trying to go, okay, we will, or whatever company that sold that to Netflix. But listen, we want this, and we want Urban in it. But we also want to cover all these other things that happen. And if Urban has a problem with that, then you know what? We think this will still work without Urban being on camera. Now, the question would be, are all these other players that are on camera in the docuseries? Tim Tebow is very prevalent. Brandon Siler is. Brandon Spikes. I mean, there's some good players, no doubt. Was it one of those situations where they're like, we will not go on camera and do this unless Urban Meyer is part of it, and thus Urban had the control over it. You see what I'm saying? Because you can't talk to players, this docuseries doesn't work. No docuseries works if you don't talk to the participants. It really
doesn't. You have to have some of them in there,
some of them.
You can't have it with them.
Nobody.
Yeah.
And you want pertinent pieces of... You don't want the third-string quarterback to be the one commenting on this, or the backup punter, okay? You want to talk to the people that were a big part of it. And so, so far it's been okay that I watched. I hate that I saw this little piece that ruined it for me for the next two episodes, and I'm sorry if I ruined anything for you.
Absolutely not.
But,
I saw that last night, too,
but
it didn't ruin anything. That's why I told you from the get-go, you're not going to ruin anything for me, because I've already seen stuff.
Right. So, I want to know... I guess I don't need to know all the dirty secrets, but I do want to know how chaotic it really was with all of those items I just mentioned. And to me, why couldn't they have left? I mean, what's the big problem with talking about chest pains or Urban Meyer? And yeah. I mean, why was that left out?
Yeah.
Now, maybe that was an Urban Meyer thing. Maybe that's just Netflix thinking, you know, that just wasn't important enough to us. We'll
don't
do.
Feel like it's relevant. Yeah.
Maybe. That's possible, too.
I'm actually glad
somebody
that
sent me. I didn't even remember all that Florida stuff. I'll be honest with you. When I read this, I remembered part of it. I forgot half of it.
There's some of that you forget, but you're not gonna learn about it here either.
No,
so
not
that's
on
that's
this
the
thing.
Thing is like so. I'm actually kind of glad that like most of that when I read it again.
I'm glad it's only four episodes.
Yes, yeah, most of when I read all that again, I realized that happened. That yeah. It's not like I told it. It's like it's still in the recesses of my mind, obviously, yeah. But it's not something that comes to the top. I think everybody and their dog wanted to hear the Aaron Hernandez story along with this, right? That would have been I think that's probably at the top of most people's list, right? Of what was Aaron Hernandez like at Florida before he
right.
left, right? Like,
yeah.
And again, there's documentaries that show that if you want to go find them, you can find those, but you can't find stuff about the Pouncey brothers, right, and stuff like that. I'm actually glad that I saw this stuff on Twitter because I'm not in a rush to go watch
yeah,
it.
Yeah, right.
But here's the thing that I saw and that I asked too is because I've had the person that I know that binged it last night and sent me a Snapchat said I didn't learn anything new about Florida football. It was fun. It was fun to go back and watch this
sure.
stuff. I didn't learn anything new. And then somebody else says something about that on Twitter, and I'm like, the name of your documentary series is Untold.
Yes, and you're
what
not
was untold
it.
About stuff that we already know. We know everything. The Johnny Manziel thing was too short,
yes,
but I
was.
Actually learned some stuff
oh,
that
yes.
I did not even know.
And that was
happened.
A 1 hour and 12 minute one episode. They should
yeah.
have had four or five episodes of that.
Yeah, we should
that,
probably we got, do the reverse
you're
of
right.
What we needed to
you're
do.
You're absolutely
yeah.
right. We could have had a 1 hour and 12 minute fluff piece with Urban Meyer, and we could have had four or five episodes of Johnny Manziel. We got way more in an hour 12 in one episode of Johnny Manziel that we didn't know. I mean, dear Lord, in 10 minutes, I got a ton of stuff.
Yeah.
Compared to what we got already with the Florida four-part docuseries. And Jack McGuire, he does stuff on Barstool and whatever else, which whether you want to say that's somebody that knows what he's doing, I don't know. But he says, Florida Doc is a flop. I turned it off after two episodes. Made Urban Meyer seem like this upstanding human being. We shouldn't have hyped up this series like we did. My TikTok from 2019 about them was better, and it was 1 minute long. So, yeah, the reviews are not good because we're not learning anything new. I think the only thing I've learned is that he worked them like dogs, and there was, and literally, like, there's some times where they're treated, and I'm sitting there going, okay, now that's, I mean, Urban wants to talk about how tough he is, so that's why that made the cutting room floor. But there could be some people look at this and go, that's kind of abusive. But he was cool with it because he thinks he's Mr. Tough Guy. Listen, I think Urban Meyer is a complete sleaze. That's what I think. I've never met him. But everything, things I've read, people that have met him, people that know him, and then what came out with Jacksonville. Forget what happened at Florida, which is a ton, on and off the field and behind closed doors. But the way he treated players at the NFL level in Jacksonville is atrocious. And then everything he did at Ohio State and doing these things he got busted on, and yet he was able to keep his job for a while, allowing coaches on his staff. You can't tell me he didn't know about their problems they were doing at home, and you had domestic abuse and everything else. I mean, Urban Meyer, one thing I do learn by watching this docuseries is that Urban Meyer will do anything it takes to win, and he don't care about the consequences. I do take that out of this so far, is that he don't care if you like him or not. Mm-hmm. He cares about winning. He cares about winning, and a lot of coaches are that way. But I don't really believe he fully cares about the players watching this. I mean, he's about himself. I think he is one of the coaches with one of the biggest egos I've ever seen in my life. And oh, yeah. And this is coming from Utah. I went to Florida, and I'm sitting here watching the first episode, and I'm going, I really wish that Florida would have lost that one game, and he would have been fired. He would never have been the person he was the rest of the way, and maybe some people would have been spared of some of his treatment. But anywho, a lot of people don't think too highly of the man. And then somehow he always gets on Fox to be some analyst when he gets fired from his job as a head coach. And it's not like he adds anything there, to be quite honest. But
yeah.
He's just a name.
Yeah. And it's, I think that's probably the disappointing part of what I've seen, because I've not watched any of it yet. And is that it's just like, there's not much being told here that's untold, right?
Right.
And so I don't know, you know, how many people have watched, like, this is the third season of this on Netflix, right? I've not watched one of these yet where I didn't learn something new.
I gotta say, I think they've
and
been good so
they,
far.
They've all been really good, and you know, I watched four out of the five the first season they did it. I watched, what, there's a five the second season, three out of four of the second season they did. I haven't seen this yacht one that they did, but but the Danbury Trashers one was one of the most intriguing
ones. Oh,
that
was good.
Because it was like, I remember that all going on. But,
if people don't know, it's a hockey situation.
It's a minor league hockey team. Where the mafia was involved with it. And it was like,
I had never heard about that.
And I actually remember something about it going on when it was going on.
That was
really good. When I watched the whole thing, and then the Marty Fish one was outstanding.
That was
like,
very good.
It was like you don't understand what some people are going through, and it was so kind of refreshing to have him on there and tell his story too. Mm-hmm. And so there's examples of these things that are so good that it's hard for me now to go into this one because I've heard not good reviews about it. And it's like, I've loved almost all of these. You know, the Manti Te'o one told me a lot of stuff that I didn't realize what was going on, right? And obviously the Tim Donaghy one was very eye-opening. Mm-hmm. And so there's nothing that I've seen yet from
Manziel's
this series.
Was good. I was so mad it was only one episode.
Yeah, and there's two more that have already come out that I've not seen from this season, with the Jake Paul one and then the baseball steroids one.
I watched the steroid one.
Yeah, and I've not seen that one.
And that one, I don't think it was as good, but it was interesting. Mm-hmm. Better than what I've seen of the Florida thing. And my oldest saw the Jake Paul, and he thought it was pretty good.
So
you're not going to hit a home run with every docuseries,
no,
I will say that.
But that's the problem, is like all of these that we just mentioned were one-off things. Right. They weren't series.
Right.
So if you're going to spend the time to put together four parts on one of them, you better make it a little bit decent.
Like, I agree.
Make it something that's untold.
That's what it's called. Untold. Yeah.
And so if you're going to do a four-part series, and I love all these one-offs, right, mm-hmm. where you've only done one, you know, some of them are 50 minutes, some of them are hour and 45, you know, but there was just one documentary, one mm-hmm. episode. And so it's like, why are you picking this one to go into the docuseries part of it if you're not going to tell the story that everybody wants to hear?
Yeah. Anywho, you can decide whether you want to watch it or not.
I'm definitely not going to rush to it now. No. I know that.
I'll still finish watching it.
I'll watch it at some point, for sure.
I was kind of excited about it myself, and I totally agree with what people are saying so far. Sad story in the NFL yesterday. An apparent explosion at a home owned by Tennessee Titans cornerback Caleb Farley has left his dad, Robert Farley, dead at age 61. Another person was injured along with the house being leveled in Mooresville, North Carolina. The explosion is reported to have occurred just before midnight and left the home in rubble yesterday morning. Authorities say that the home is a total loss, as well as several vehicles. Neighbors in the areas were said to have heard a loud explosion and smelled gas. It was a 6,300-square-foot, big, huge $2 million house, and only thing left, according to one report, was part of the garage. And luckily only one person died but it is his dad, and he lost his mother. He's been through a lot of tragic things in his life, Caleb Farley, as he played at Virginia Tech. He sat out the 1 year before he was going to be drafted because of COVID, because of family things, and when you risk anything, and then that hurt his stock going in the NFL. And so
I was going to say, when you said Virginia Tech, that all clicked for me. Mm-hmm. I was like, I remember him.
Yeah. So thoughts and prayers go out to him and his family, no doubt. Baker Mayfield's won the job as the Buccaneers' new number one quarterback ahead of challenger Kyle Trask. So Baker is the heir apparent to Tom Brady at Tampa. So at what point does Tom Brady unretire and come back to the Bucs? I'm kidding. Okay, now let's get to Chris Jones. Chris Jones has been holding out a training camp in the Chiefs preseason for well over a month now. And the fines are racking up, although I honestly don't think it's that big a deal, the fines. People are blowing that way out of proportion. But instead of seeing that as a lack of leverage and a reason to report back to Chiefs camp, and he is under contract for another year, Jones has apparently dug in even deeper when it comes to demanding more money from the Chiefs in the form of a new lucrative contract extension. And yesterday, Jones stated on Twitter he's willing to sit out until week 8. Jones is 29 in the prime of his career. He's outplayed the terms of his current deal and made the Pro Bowl each of the last four seasons. First team All-Pro last year when the Chiefs won the Super Bowl. Had a career-high 15.5 sacks, 44 tackles, 2 forced fumbles, fumble recovery, 4 passes defended. Now, per the NFL's collective bargaining agreement, players under contract to extend their holdouts to the regular season are fined a game check for each game missed. Jones is entering the final year of a 4-year, $80 million deal and is due $20 million this year. That adds up to roughly $1.18 million per game that he would lose if he sits out every game, 1.18. Extended over 7 games, Jones would be risking $8 million in fines in addition to his training camp preseason tally, which is more than 1.4. So he's looking at almost $10 million he's given up if he would sit out the first seven games and he came back for week eight. That counts as fines. He said yesterday on Twitter, I can afford it. That was his response. He also said something today on Twitter. It's been a little cryptic. Thanking God for something. So, okay, so Chiefs Kingdom is in a tizzy. I mean, they're freaking out. They've been waiting to freak out. They just want an excuse to freak out, in my opinion. My prediction was the deal would be done yesterday, or, you know, obviously today we'd have him back in camp. You said this week as well. You said Monday. And neither one of those has happened. He wants to be the second highest paid defensive lineman, and he should be, in my opinion. Aaron Donald.
No, I don't disagree with that.
No, and Brett Veach hasn't necessarily argued that either.
No.
And now people are like, well, listen, if you can't come to a deal, you just trade him. Well, you trade him now, you get no value for this season when you're trying to go back to back. So if you end up trading Chris Jones, that was a major miscalculation by Brett Veach and the Kansas City Chiefs, if you end up trading him. Because you're going to get draft picks. You're not going to get a player of his caliber in a trade, obviously. You might get a plug-in defensive tackle that could, you know, help against the run, maybe. But you're going to get probably draft picks, and you aren't going to draft again until next April. I still am confident that this thing's going to get done because, first of all, the Chiefs aren't saying anything negative. And honestly, Chris Jones hasn't said anything negative either. All he's saying is, I'm willing to hold out to get what I'm worth. I mean, what is negative that he said? He hasn't taken a shot at the organization No. yet. He hasn't said anything bad about the Chiefs organization. He hasn't said anything about Brett Veach. And I will say this, and I think you know this as well as anybody. We all know this, I think, if you're a true fan and you step back and understand the situation. I think Chris Jones is jerking fans around for fun. I think Chris Jones knows this is going to get done. I don't think there's no shred of doubt in my mind that Chris Jones is not serious when he says that he would wait till week eight. There is no way he's giving up that much money. That is just something to get the... I think it's part of it's to get the Chiefs' attention, fine. But I also think it's part of him screwing around with the fans that are fickle.
And it won't leave him alone.
And won't leave him alone. Yes, sir. I think Chris Jones... And like somebody pointed out yesterday, and I thought it was an astute observation, do you notice that the big-time insiders, you know, Schefter and all these other people, aren't exactly freaking out about this? That they're not making it top-of-the-headline news?
Yeah.
Because normally it would be. So I think they are privy to know what I'm thinking, and that is Chris Jones likes to goof with these people that mess with him on Twitter. And he likes to put cryptic things out there to make people freak out. Because here's the thing. Every player, I think, does this, or at least most. They keep the receipts. I have to admit, I'm an adult who's 47. I keep some receipts, too.
Oh, for sure.
And I don't forget people that have wronged me. I may forgive them, I may not, but I don't forget you wronged me. I may be able to forgive you, but I ain't gonna forget. And I think Chris Jones, clearly there have been people that have taken shots at him. There are people that have said, sports talk media hosts, including myself, that have said, you know, back when he got his first deal, that the Chiefs might be better off trading him and not giving that much money. And he's proven me wrong because he finally came through. The last few years, he played well in the Super Bowl when they won it the first time, but last year he really came through, okay? So, to me, last year, he earned it. I have no problem with the Chiefs giving him a big deal. I have no problem with the Chiefs trading him either. I really don't. Now, I think now I don't want him to trade him, but I have no problem if they, well, they could franchise tag him next year, honestly, if they wanted to.
2 years in a row.
They could. But there's really no doubt in my mind, and I know Chiefs Kingdom is freaking out, but I don't think there's any – I said it, and I'll stick with it. I'm going to be consistent with my argument or my contention. If Chris Jones is back for the Jacksonville Jaguar game, that's all I care about. So, oh, my God, he's going to miss the Lions game. Listen, if he misses the Lions game, I'm not going to freak out. I know everybody else will. I'm in a super minority when I say that. But – I've seen NFL players miss games before. I've seen them hold out going in the season. And usually it hurts the player more than the team. Now, Emmitt Smith would be certainly an exception. That hurt the Cowboys dearly when they started 0-2. Guess what? They still won the Super Bowl. Plenty of time to recover. You have 17 games. Okay, the Chiefs lost to the Colts. Did that end their season?
No.
No.
Sure
so, didn't. So if Chris Jones doesn't sign until 2 days after the Chiefs lose to the Lions. And I'm not saying they will. The Lions are an approved team, but Jared Goff's their quarterback. He's decent. It'll be at Arrowhead. Even if the Chiefs don't get a great pass rush, I think the Lions' defense isn't great. I think the Chiefs will be just fine as long as they're healthy. I think the Chiefs can win without Chris Jones against the Lions. I do. Now, maybe I'm proven wrong. But even if they did lose, first of all, it's not a conference game. So when it comes to tiebreakers, it ain't going to hurt you. Yeah, you start the year 0-1. Yeah, you're going to get your rings and your banner, and it's going to spoil the night if you lose. And then you're going to blame Beach for the loss because you didn't sign Chris Jones, because Chris Jones single-handedly would have beat the Lions. But it won't be the end of the world. Chiefs fans, I know, step away from the ledge before you jump to your death. Okay? If Chris Jones misses the Detroit Lions game, it is not the end of the world. I could even argue if he misses the first three games, it's not the end of the world. The Lions at home, Jacksonville on the road 10 days after the first game, which is on Thursday. The Bears, September 24th. You don't think you can beat the Bears without Chris Jones? I think you can at home. The game that stands out to me is Jacksonville, because they are I think, somewhat of a threat in AFC. I think they are a good team. They pushed the Chiefs in the divisional round last year. I would really love to see Chris Jones, you know, at 100% healthy and in football shape, ready to go for September 17th. That's the date I have circled. I'm not going to freak out about September 7th. And people talk about all the distractions this causes. I don't think it's that big a deal. I think the distraction part is overblown when people are talking about this. I think people just want to come up with something that just absolutely stirs the pot. You just want to make a story that is bigger than it really is. Chris Jones is holding out. So have lots of players. Chris Jones will not sit out 7 games. If you believe that, I think you're one of the most naive people on earth. Okay? Now, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'll be proven wrong, but I strongly believe that. He will either be traded or he will be signed. I doubt he'll be traded at this point in time. Is it a distraction? Listen, Patrick Mahomes gets asked lots of questions. Travis Kelce has dealt with lots of questions over the years. There have been distractions many times before. You don't think there was a distraction when Mahomes was hurt after the Jacksonville playoff game and all the questions? That's a distraction when you're dealing with is Mahomes healthy? Is Mahomes going to be able to play? Can he play? Can he play? Can he play? Can he play? And guess what? They handled it fine, didn't they? This team has such great leadership. It has a great quarterback that's a leader. They have a tight end that's a leader. They have a coach that's a leader. The Chiefs will be just fine. I am not worried about a distraction, because first of all, even if it were true and they lose the Lions, I don't think they lose the Lions because it's a distraction. They lose the Lions because the Lions played better. And yes, maybe they lose the Lions because Jared Goff has all day to throw and they get no pass rush. And it's just like, you know, like you can't touch the quarterback in training camp, and Goff's got a yellow jersey on because the Chiefs can't come close to touching him. So you could argue, well, you know, we lost the Lions because we didn't have Chris Jones. That's fine. I can listen to that a little bit. But if you lose to the Lions week one, it isn't the end of the season. You can easily still get home field advantage in the playoffs. And if you don't, I still believe Mahomes is good enough to win wherever he goes. And he's proven that in the regular season. He goes to L.A. and beats the Chargers every freaking time. He goes to Denver and beats Denver every single freaking time. He's undefeated against the division when it comes to, isn't it road games? He's undefeated?
I believe so.
Yeah, I think it is. The Raiders. He doesn't lose in L.A. than Vegas or L.A. or Oakland, wherever you want to play it. Africa, as Michael Beasley said. So what? Even if the Chiefs don't have home field advantage, and you know there is going to be a year where Mahomes won't have home field advantage. At least I think so. You know, 5 years in a row, they haven't had to play a road game. Is it the end of the world? I mean, the Chiefs went to Cincinnati last year and should have won that game. They didn't. They don't get blown out ever, hardly ever. And the one they got blown out was a Super Bowl when they're missing the right and left tackle. Okay, and guys drop balls off their helmet for crying out loud. Tyreek Hill, Darrell Williams come to mind right off the bat. So the Chiefs are good enough to start 0-1 and be fine. They're good enough to not have Chris Jones and still win against the Lions on opening night. So the distraction argument, I think, would apply if you had maybe a new head coach, a coach green behind the ears. You had a, like, listen, if this was happening with the Indianapolis Colts, yeah, I think it's a big distraction. You got a rookie quarterback you're trying to focus on. You got, as a coach, you got to deal with some of the questions. Andy Reid's dealt with holdouts many times in his career, for crying out loud. I don't buy that Chris Jones is really going to be a distraction, even if he's not signed by September 7th. The media can ask all the questions they want. The players will handle it. That won't, the distraction part won't cause them to lose a football game, because the Chiefs are better than that, okay? Where they will lose football games will be because Chris Jones is not on the field, because their defense maybe can't get a pass rush. If you have to double Chris Jones, that frees up other people. There's no Chris Jones to worry about. Okay, now Karlaftis isn't going to get a chance to get to the quarterback or whoever else it might be. So do I want Chris Jones on the team? Heck yeah, I do. But I'm not going to freak out like everybody else because he puts out some cryptic tweet saying, I can afford it and I can wait till week eight. If you truly believe that he's going to set out seven games. First of all, he's given up money in the prime of his career. And I will say it's good. It's a cool that you want to stand up for yourself, but you're actually going to cost yourself more money than you're actually going to gain by doing it that way. And then the Chiefs might just get, and here's the other thing here. You're rolling the dice. A lot of times these guys hold out and they go, you know what? I'm not getting my money. I'll hold out and see what happens without me for a game or two. Now, for Emmitt Smith, it worked out perfectly. The Cowboys lost two games, and it's like, holy smokes, we need Emmitt in now. And he got what he needed, right? But it can go the other way, too.
Yeah.
Chris Jones decides, you know what? I think I can sit out five, six, seven games. And the Chiefs start 6-1. His leverage has gone down, hasn't it?
Absolutely has, yeah.
And when I see Lance the Spoken or anybody else throwing out there that the Chiefs cannot win a Super Bowl without Chris Jones, that is a bunch of hogwash. First of all, that's the same people last year that said the Chiefs window had closed and they can't win a Super Bowl without Tyreek Hill. And we proved you wrong. You just have a glimpse of history within the last 12 months to say that. Now, like I've said, Chris Jones is way more important in regards to the position he plays. You can find more wide receivers easier than finding a dominant defensive tackle. And that's, and I don't blame Chris Jones one single iota for holding out and trying to get his money, because this is probably his last gigantic deal he's going to get. And he is right. He and his agent is right. He should be at least the second highest paid defensive tackle in all of football. He's better than Quinnen Williams. He's better than these guys that got paid $24 million a year in the offseason. He's done way more in his career, and he's still in his prime. So I agree with all the thinking that he has from the standpoint of holding out, trying to get his money. And if he thinks the best thing to do is to wait till, you know, the eighth week of the season. But here's the thing. You say you can sit out seven games. At that point, the Chiefs may say, you know what, we made adjustments here. And we think we're okay. And you know what? You've actually kind of helped us, because now we believe we can win without you. We can save the money and spend it elsewhere in the future. We can now go get Nick Bolton signed. We could re-sign Snead if we want to. Creed Humphrey's going to be up after next year. We'll take care of Trey Smith. We can give Kelsey more money. I mean, all of a sudden we got more flexibility. So you might have done us a favor. And I said last year when Tyreek Hill wanted an extra couple million dollars, because of the Davante Adams situation and with the Raiders, and he got traded, the first thing I said on the show was, I think this might be a blessing in disguise. Well, dear Lord, a year later, they're Super Bowl champs, and they're doing just fine without Tyreek Hill. So don't sit here and tell me they can't win the Super Bowl without Chris Jones. They can. They can. Will it be tougher? Yeah. Will the betting odds go down that they win the Super Bowl? Yes. But you're telling me that without Chris Jones, the Chiefs can't win a Super Bowl? No, I'll tell you who they can't win a Super Bowl without is Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah.
They can't win a Super Bowl without Patrick Mahomes. I may even say they can't win a Super Bowl without Kelsey, but I would say they got a better chance of doing it without Kelsey, but Mahomes is the key one. That's the guy. So we can go without Tyreek Hill. We can go without Clyde Edwards-Helaire. We can plug in a seventh-round running back. We can pick up a guy, Jerick McKinnon, other people don't want. And he does great and has more touchdown catches than Tyreek Hill in a season, for crying out loud. We can go get MVS, and we can get Juju Smith-Schuster, and we can draft Sky Moore, and we can go make a shrewd trade for Kadarius Toney. We roll with the punches here in Kansas City. We can adapt. We're a chameleon, okay? We can change our spots if we need to. Might not be exactly the way we want to go. Do you think the Chiefs wanted Tyreek Hill to be gone last year? No. That was not plan A. That was not plan A. The plan A was to have Tyreek Hill back. But they already put together a plan B. They talked with Mahomes and Kelsey about it. I can assure you, I can absolutely assure you, without a shadow of a doubt, that Brett Veach and the Kansas City Chiefs already have Plan B in place, ready to pull the trigger if they need to go there. In fact, I bet you there's a Plan C. Because the great organizations have plans. Great companies and corporations, they don't sit here putting all their eggs in one basket. Do the Chiefs want to do Plan B or C or D? No. I guarantee you they don't. But they're not dumb enough and naive enough to think that, well, this automatically take care of itself. We'll just cross our fingers. Eventually, Chris will come to his senses and we'll come to a number. No, they know it's still hard work. I guarantee you they're communicating with Jones and his agent. This is an ongoing situation. And for you guys that are freaking out, the first game of the season is still not for 2 weeks. But even if he isn't back for that game, or he's back but he can't play but 10 snaps, that will not make or break whether the Chiefs win a Super Bowl. Losing or winning against the Detroit Lions or the Jaguars or the Bears the first 3 weeks of the season, a month of September, will not determine the Chiefs' fate of winning a Super Bowl. Unless Mahomes is out for the season because of an injury. There, Chris Jones doesn't make or break whether they win a Super Bowl. Okay? Your chances of winning it, yes, I think are slimmer. I totally agree with that. Would they be better with him on the field? Absolutely, especially the way he played last year. But don't sit here and tell me that they can't win a Super Bowl without Chris Jones. They won a Super Bowl when he didn't. How many postseason games did they go in his career until he finally got a freaking sack? It was last year. It took him how many years to finally get a sack? Now, he had some pass breakups. You know, he did some big things in the Super Bowl against the Niners without sacking the quarterback.
Yeah.
I'm not saying he didn't help the team win a Super Bowl. I'm not saying he didn't help him win last year. I'm not saying he isn't a great player. He is. And like I said, I back him up. If I were him, I'd hold out and get as much as I can, too, because this is your last big deal. But for people to go out there on social media and say, we have no chance of winning a Super Bowl without Chris Jones, dear God, did you forget what happened last year?
Yeah, and I said that a few weeks back.
You think you've got a whole bunch of imbeciles running this organization?
Yeah.
This isn't the Kansas City Royals, where we just give everybody a whole bag of money after they went and signed Alex Gordon and let Ben Zobrist walk, okay? It's not holding on to players too long and then not getting good value for them. No. This is the Kansas City Chiefs, the two-time Super Bowl champion the last 5 years, defending Super Bowl champion with a whole bunch of receivers that people said, I don't know if they can win with these receivers without Tyreek Hill. They adapt. Chris Jones, that should be a little bit of a warning to him. So he could end up overplaying his hand here. He could. But I still think he's goofing with people. I don't think there is any way he's serious about, I'll wait till week 8 if I need to. I don't buy that for a second.
No, I don't either. I've not bought anything that is contrary to that Chris Jones will be on this team this year. Again, he's under contract, so
he ain't going nowhere.
He probably should come play unless he gets traded. So I don't know. He can make his decision on what week he feels like is best for him to come play if he doesn't get what he wants. But yeah, the deeper you go into that, and if the team keeps winning and winning, which they're still expected to do, whether Chris Jones is on the field or not, they are expected to win games, and they're going into every game with that mindset of being undefeated whenever he decides to come back, right? Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I mean, you can easily overplay your hand because you can sit here and just go annihilate people, and you know, Karlaftis improves, right? So he's getting sacks on the edge. You're still getting pressure up the middle with Danny Shelton. You know, you're not getting the sacks that you might get, but you're still getting that push and that pressure. Other guys,
yeah, Drew Tranquil now is better at coverage and linebacker. That might free up Nick Bolton to get some sacks.
Exactly, and Willie Gay. And so you're in a situation here where you've also got a defensive coordinator that knows how to work with the personnel that he has. He's not sitting here waiting around for Chris Jones, Steve Spagnuolo, to be like, hey, I can't run my defense without you out here. I guess we're just going to forfeit. We're just going to stop playing defense because you're not here. No, that's not what he does, and he's proven that's not what he does. He's got a great track record of working with whoever it is and making them work within his defense and maybe adjusting to make his defense work within them. And so it's like I'm not concerned about it. I said this a month ago of that aspect. If he's not there, the Chiefs can't win. I don't buy that for a second because they still have one of the most dynamic offenses in the league, and you still only have to be mid-range defensively, like in the middle of the pack.
Mahomes has proven
he still
that.
Win a lot of games.
With a horrible defense, he was a D4 offsides penalty of being in the Super Bowl.
It has been proven time and time and time and time again that this offense doesn't care who's over on the other side of the football. They're still going to go out and play. They're still going to give you a chance to win every single game you're playing and every single playoff game you're playing. And so I would caution Chris Jones from that aspect of it, if I'm his agent, right, of like, hey, yeah, we get it. I know. Listen, your dynamic defensive tackles don't do what you do if they're not named Aaron Donald. But it's like, you know what? You can be at least put in somebody. There can be a stopgap measure for you on this team, and this team is still going to win games and a lot of them. So, yeah, I mean, I don't think there's any reason to believe that he's going to be sitting out even that long, whatever he says on Twitter, because it just doesn't make sense for him personally if he doesn't have the contract yet to sit out that long. So I don't buy that happening. I still, you know, I'm late on when it's going to happen, but I still think he'll be back with the team before they play their season opener. I don't know if he'll play in that game, but you know, as this keep goes further and further than what I, you know, initially anticipated. But and I agree with you on the distraction thing. Like the distraction's not going to be wins losses. That's not going to affect wins and losses. But at the same time, I don't think anybody wants this hanging over their head when they start the season if they can avoid it. Right.
Sure.
And so you're going to do everything you can to not have it because it'll be
that.
A distraction for the media. It won't be a distraction for the team. I don't think as far as like you said, wins and losses. But it can be a distraction. From the aspect of we're not talking, the media is not talking about anything we're doing other than Chris Jones, which is not a problem for the team, right?
Like I say, that doesn't
but
affect the team.
It's
the media being distracted.
Yeah, that's where the distraction is going to come in, and people are going to start saying it's a distraction when it's really not.
Yes.
But I would prefer this not be hanging over anybody's head when the season starts, even if it's not going to be a distraction, because it's just let's just move on with it.
Well, our predictions were he'd be there right now this week. He was going to sign and be there, and it still could happen this week. But revised prediction is I'm with you. I think he will get signed and he will be on a limited snap count against Detroit on September 7th. That's my prediction right now. My second prediction would be at the very latest he will get signed after the season opener. And then there's 10 days in between games of getting ready for the Jacksonville game. And that Jacksonville game is more important than the Lions game. It is, because that's a conference game, a tiebreaker situation. The Lions game is not as important. Games against NFC teams are not as important. I mean, yes, you want to win. Every win is important. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But when it comes to tiebreakers, like winning a division game is like winning two games. You know, you winning a game head-to-head against the Bills or the Bengals is like winning two games. You definitely would like to have a leg up on Jacksonville. And you got to go on the road. So that's, like I said, that's 17th of September is what I circle. I'm not freaking out on September 7th like everybody else.
I'm not freaking out on any date, to be honest with
you. No, I wouldn't. I think the Chiefs will be 1-0 going into Jacksonville anyway.
Yeah, I don't care if he does sit out until week 8. I don't anticipating what I think who the Chiefs are, right? I'm still probably not going to be freaking out because, I just don't think he's going to make the difference in, you know, 6-1 to 1-6 or something extreme. You know what I'm saying? Like,
listen, I think he's the type of guy that, obviously, I agree that you more than likely need him to win the Super Bowl because he, when you get to the big, big games, it's hard to find those playmakers, especially on the defensive side of the ball, and especially that position. So I totally understand why people freak out. I understand why people would say that the Chiefs, their chances of going back-to-back are less. I would agree with those statements. But when you say we can't win it without him, now that, I think, is going a little too far.
Yeah.
You can maybe, you know, maybe you have to outscore people in the playoffs to win it. And Mahomes nearly did it a few years ago. And I think the Chiefs' defense is better than that team a year ago if they don't have Chris Jones. I think the team is a lot faster, younger, more athletic. And then who knows? Maybe there's an opportunity for somebody that doesn't get play as many snaps that becomes, you know, a very important player that gets better and helps fill the void of Chris Jones. I mean, we're just assuming nobody can do anything without Chris Jones, and I think that's a a somewhat of a poor assumption because these guys are all pros. These are pro ball. These are professional football players.
Yeah.
Okay. But when it comes down to, you know, last year a big game when you needed to play, Chris Jones sacked Joe Burrow. He finally came through when you really needed him as a star to make a play, and he sacked him in the last possession of the Bengals, which helped set up the punt return for Moore, and then the Chiefs, of course, got in field goal range. Mahomes with a scramble on one leg, pushed out of bounds, penalty, field goal, Chiefs win, go to the Super Bowl. So those are the type of plays you need. But do you have to have it week one against Detroit? I say no.
Agree.
All right. One more thing here. NFL sleeper. We ain't got time to think about these things, but NFL sleeper in each league. Is there a team in the AFC that you think we're overlooking that could be a sleeper? And I'm going to tell you right now that people are going to sit here and talk about the Dolphins still, right? Yeah. People are going to talk about the Bills. People are talking about the Jets because of Aaron Rodgers. People are talking about the Ravens and all the weapons they got for Lamar Jackson, and he's back and he's happy now. Everybody will talk about the Bengals with Joe Burrow. A lot of people are talking about the Jaguars, certainly. And a lot of people talk about the Chiefs and the Chargers. So forget all those teams I just gave you because those are not sleepers. Those are all teams that are expected to make the playoffs. Is there a team I did not mention where you say, because every year there's a team that usually makes some kind of run in both conferences or does extremely better than people thought. Like Minnesota was way better than people thought last year. Mm-hmm. Okay. Way better. What was another team last year that was better than people thought they were going to be? Well, Jacksonville.
Yeah.
Jacksonville was the one that came off the mat. They were like, what, 2 or 4 wins a year before? And then boom, playoffs. So is there a team that I did not mention that you think is a sleeper in the AFC that is being overlooked and not talked about enough?
If there is, it's not coming to my mind right now.
I think, for me,
I think there's a lot of people that are going to say the Jets, but I don't buy that.
No. I think there are people that are overlooking the Titans, which is a mistake because they're well-coached. And Tannehill's back, and they do have D-Hop. They at least got a weapon. They got rid of A.J. Brown before last year. That really hurt their offense. That's not my sleeper, but I think they're being a little bit under-respected and undervalued right now. And that division, the Colts aren't going to be good, it doesn't look like, with a rookie quarterback. The Texans are not good, with probably a rookie quarterback. Jacksonville, obviously, is ascending, but they might have a step back after, you know, reading their clippings too much. So the Titans, I'll tell people, don't write them off quite yet. I think Denver will be improved, but I don't think they're good. I don't think it'll be improved enough to make the playoffs. The Raiders, I think, could be a little bit better, but we say that every year. But the team for me that I'm going to go with as a sleeper, well, I got two of them. I got two of them, and they're in the same division. And I think this division is going to be absolutely cutthroat. I think this division might end up being the most competitive division in all of football. And that's a good thing if you're a Chiefs fan. And that's the division that the Bengals reside in. Think about the AFC North. The Steelers, with a rookie quarterback, nearly made the playoffs last year and struggled on offense. And T.J. Watt missed most of the year. So my choice for a sleeper would be either or pick them both. Everybody wants to talk about the Bengals. Clearly, there's a reason why. People want to talk about Ravens. Clearly, Lamar Jackson's healthy. If he's good and healthy the whole season, listen, they were making the playoffs every year he's been hurt. I mean, they were, one year they were going to be the whole number one seed. And their season's been derailed because he's gotten hurt. Now he's happy. He's got his money. Now can he stay healthy? If he stays healthy, the Ravens are a legitimate threat to win that division. There is no doubt about it. And they got Zay Flowers, a rookie, OBJ. They've got some weapons. They still got a running game. So the Ravens are legit, but they're not my sleeper. But think about this division. The Steelers last year nearly made the playoffs. The Browns didn't get their quarterback till week 11, Deshaun Watson, who'd been suspended. And that's the sleeper. If I have to pick one of the two as sleepers, nobody's talking about the Browns. If Deshaun Watson, and it's a gigantic if, but he's still young. If Deshaun Watson goes back to the form he had when he was with the Texans, he's got some weapons. He's got Amari Cooper. He's got a tight end. I forgot his name. Onjuko's a good, if he's healthy. Nick Chubb is one of the best running backs in football. They have one of the better defenses in football. They've got one of the best pass rushers in football in Myles Garrett. The Browns have pieces. Their season was wrecked because they had a quarterback, and then they knew Watson was coming in, and Jacoby Brissett did the best he could. And the Browns lost some games they should have won that they blew. They were better than their record indicated. They were right there. So for me, if Deshaun Watson gets back to the level or close to the level he played prior to what fell apart in Houston with his massage parlor stuff or whatever you want to call it,
I think that's a team people are sleeping on. And then the Steelers, I think, are always going to be solid because of Mike Tomlin. And if T.J. Watt stays healthy a whole year, that's a whole different defense. And then Kenny Pickett, I think, is going to get better. And they've got Pat Freiermuth. They got this Darnell Washington kid tied in, 6'7", 284 from Georgia, who looks like he could be a stud. They got George Pickens, who's one of the most talented young wide receivers in all of football and makes an all kind of one-handed catches. Deontay Johnson's an outstanding wide receiver. Najee Harris is a very good running back that ran for 1,100 yards. The AFC North, I could make an argument that this is the best division or be the toughest division, and that's the Bengals reside in. People automatically think the Bengals are going to win this division. That might be a battle of attrition. I mean, that division is legit if the Browns live up to their talent.
Yeah, like you said.
And Lamar stays healthy? Yeah. Dear God, that's a tough division.
I agree. It's a tough division. The Steelers with Kenny Pickett is something I need to see mm-hmm. before I can go there. I just don't know yet.
And, yeah, no, I get that.
Yeah, but the Browns, I mean, obviously, if Deshaun Watson plays like he did mm-hmm. when he was in Houston, when he was at the top of his game, there's no question.
Remember, he's the quarterback of a team that's up 24-0 on the Chiefs.
There's no question that team immediately gets very, very, very much better.
Yes.
And it's there's not a question about it. But the man's not been on a field in a serious situation for a while,
yeah,
right? Like,
true.
I know he played last year,
sure.
But it's like
they were basically eliminated.
Yeah, it's like I got to see him be Deshaun Watson mm-hmm. with the Texans, and if he is that, yeah, I completely agree with mm-hmm. you. I think the Browns could be a team that could be somebody we're not talking about that could end up, at least in the playoffs. I don't know if I don't know if they'll win the division, but at least get one of the wild cards and be a team that could be a sleeper and by that time of the year make a run in the playoffs. But I don't know. For some reason, I just don't think he's going to be what they expected him or want him to be, Deshaun Watson. I don't know why. It's just a gut feeling. Obviously, he's got the skill and talent to do it.
I think the Browns might have more talent in certain ways than the Steelers, but I think the Steelers are better coached. And I do think if T.J. Watt stays healthy, the Steelers, even if Kenny Pickett didn't play great, they're going to be in every game because of their defense. So I think they're both scary.
Yeah.
The NFC, Giants made a playoffs last year. Eagles, not a sleeper. Cowboys are not a sleeper. The Lions, you can't say are a sleeper anymore because of what they did late last year. The Vikings are not a sleeper. The Niners are not a sleeper. There's more options in the NFC to pick a sleeper because basically I'm sitting here going, who's the best teams in the NFC? And everybody says Eagles, Niners, and then probably Cowboys are third on that list. And that's it. Nobody else is thinking anybody else from the NFC is going to make the Super Bowl. That's the three teams that be mentioned all the time. Is there a team out of the NFC you say, oh, boy, you're not paying attention to these guys? That's a sleeper. And the Vikings won't be a sleeper. They won 13 games a year ago.
Yeah, I was going to say the Lions, but if you're taking them off the list, then
I take them off the list because they were hot and they're getting the first game of the year with Kansas City. That means they're not a sleeper anymore.
Yeah, I don't have anybody then.
Man, you don't have sleepers on any of this?
No,
where's your imagination?
Are the Seahawks aren't sleepers? Are they?
Well, they made the playoffs last year.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like the Lions because they didn't.
Well,
right?
Well, I'll tell you the team that's a sleeper for me, and this is the easiest one I had to think of. The NFC South is the worst division in football.
Yeah.
And so you get the Saints are my sleeper.
Yeah, I knew you were going to go with that.
They got Derek Carr, who's better and upgrade at quarterback since they've had Drew Brees retire. He's better than Jameis Winston. Winston isn't bad. He's a nice backup. So they got a good backup situation. They got Jamal Williams to rotate with Kamara, but he's going to play the first three games because Kamara is out, suspended. But Kamara comes back. I think he's going to be more involved in the offense. Michael Thomas is back. Once again, big if he can stay healthy. Mm. But if he does, that's kind of like Deshaun Watson. Look out. They're in a bad division. Now, the Browns and Steelers are in a tough division.
Yeah.
They're in a division with Desmond Ridder at quarterback, Baker Mayfield at quarterback, and Bryce Young, a number one pick who's been running for his life in the preseason and offensive line. So you can't sit here and tell me the Panthers are going to win the division. I can't pick the Bucs, although I think they still have talent. But I think Kyle Trask will eventually be their quarterback, to be honest mm-hmm. with you. But I think the Bucs could somehow hang around. The Falcons, Bijan Robinson, a lot of hype around him. I'll believe it when I see it with running backs first year. And Desmond Ridder at quarterback, I don't know if he's the real deal at all. Kyle Pitts coming off a serious injury. To me, by default, the Saints win the division. And if they're in a bad division, that means that they got maybe 6 wins right there. And they've got a quarterback that has been in the playoffs, a quarterback that I think can relax a little bit because he's got a fresh start. I respect Derek Carr. I'm not saying he's a great quarterback, but I think he's very good or solid. He's got some weapons. The Saints defense last year was good. It kept them in games. It was their quarterback play when Winston was out. That's what killed them last year. Was they lost games because their offense just couldn't get anything going. It was quarterback play. Mm-hmm. So the Saints are my sleeper pick out of the NFC to make a run, and I could easily see them get to the playoffs and win a game. I wouldn't be stunned if they make a run in the postseason because the NFC is pretty wide open. I mean, I still can't buy in that the Eagles are going to be as dominant as they were. The Cowboys are the Cowboys. They could win the division, and they're still not going to go to the Super Bowl because, you know, they haven't done it forever. And the Niners, you've still got questions at quarterback, without a doubt. Brock Purdy played well for a while, but he still was Mr. Irrelevant. So, and I will say the Seahawks are not a sleeper, but the Seahawks are doing something special. If Geno Smith plays like he did last year, they've got Kenneth Walker, a young running back. They got Tyler Lockett, Enigba, who they got, a rookie who could be a stud, DK Metcalf. They got three outstanding wide receivers. Their defense is young and talented, and they have drafted really, really well. I think the Seahawks are a team that will push the Niners in that division because of simply the Seahawks have better quarterback play. Now, if Geno goes back the way he used to be, that cancels that out. So I was close to saying the sleeper is the Seahawks, but they did make the playoffs. So,
yeah, if I can't call the Lions a sleeper, you can't call the Seahawks.
Right. No, I agree. No, I agree with you. I totally agree with you. And I totally agree with you there. But the Saints and Seahawks are two teams that I think are going to be spoilers. They're the two that could be spoilers. I don't know if I think anybody else can. Do you? I mean, somebody said the Commanders. Well, Sam Howell, first-year starting quarterback.
Quarterback position.
Right, but Bienemy's their OC, if you believe in Bienemy. The Giants, I can't go with Daniel Jones, but I think Brian Dable's a heck of a coach.
But again, that's a team that was at the playoffs.
They were.
That's not a...
Right.
Well, yeah, I guess.
But I'm talking about a Super Bowl contender.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's... And see, that when you ask me who a sleeper, like... Because we're already talking about all these Super Bowl contenders,
sure,
right? So, like, in my brain, it's like I'm going to a sleeper. That means it's somebody that can make a run and maybe even win a Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. And the teams that have already been there,
For me, the sleeper is a team that's unexpected to make the playoffs. I don't consider a sleeper Super Bowl contender.
Yeah,
because that's pretty hard to anybody to have the guts to pick somebody.
Yeah,
like
and then I can't even, even on that definition, I can't pick the Saints because you just said by default they should be win the division, right? So that's, I mean...
Right, but nobody's talking about them being, like, great or anything.
It's your definition of a sleeper would be a team that could make the playoffs, right? Well, the Saints...
Well, yeah, the Saints can make the playoffs.
Well, yeah, but that's not...
They didn't last year.
But then in the same sentence, you say by definition, or by default, they should win the division.
Well, yeah.
So that's not a sleeper.
Well, that's my opinion.
Yeah.
That's my opinion.
But, I mean,
they should win the division.
Yeah.
Not everybody agrees with that.
I think most people are going to, though.
Maybe.
Because I 100% agree with your statement, by default, they should win the division, because they do. I mean, they've got the experience that you need at quarterback, right?
Yeah.
But that experience has never shown me anything past making the playoffs,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
At quarterback for the Saints. Mm-hmm. So I guess I'm
Drew Brees when they won a Super Bowl.
Exactly. And mm-hmm, and that's totally different,
sure,
right? Because they were expected to do that back then, right?
They were winning 12, 13 every year.
Yeah. And so the experience that they have at quarterback right now, Derek Carr and Jameis Winston, have never shown me anything past making the playoffs, right?
Right.
And so that's why it's hard for me to pick them in my mind as a sleeper, because I feel like they should automatically make the playoffs.
Okay. All right.
It's tough.
Do you think
the Lions didn't make the playoffs?
So
and I think
so
they're
in a
division that they're not expected to win. And I think they can make the playoffs and maybe do some damage when they get there. So again, this is a team that's not made the playoffs, and I don't think a lot of people are talking about. So I still think
I hear a lot of people talking about the Lions. Oh God, yes. Oh dear Lord, people are picking the Lions to beat the Chiefs. I mean, there's hype on the Lion train wagon, man.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. In fact, the team that's going under the radar is amazing to me. The Vikings aren't getting talked about very much.
Well,
they won 13 games.
And that's a lot of times, right? Like the Vikings just, I don't think with
the Lions
or
sexy
Kirk Cousins will ever get the respect that they want. And again, that's kind of like I'm talking about with Derek Carr and Jameis Winston, right? I haven't seen you do anything to prove me that you are the team to do that, right?
I'll tell you two teams that are interesting to me in NFC that a lot of people aren't talking about. Like, obviously, the Commanders, you know, they were close to the playoffs even last year. I mean, they were respectable, no doubt. So they could make the playoffs. People are talking about the Lions, and then people can point to the Vikings, you know, won the division in 13 games. Nobody's talking about the Packers, except in a negative way, only because Aaron Rodgers isn't there. Nobody knows how good Jordan Love can be. And I would just laugh my butt off if Jordan Love ends up being really good and the Packers end up making the playoffs. Nobody is even mentioning the Packers making the playoffs because Aaron Rodgers was a one-man team. They still have talent on that team. All right, they still have A.J. Dillon, Aaron Jones. They've got two running backs that they could maybe rely on a little bit more to help Jordan Love. They might be a little bit more balanced, although last year they did run the ball a lot more for Rodgers, and Rodgers had one of his worst years ever. And the other team that a lot of people can overlook a little bit, and I know not everybody's sold on Justin Fields, and I don't think he has enough weapons around him, but Justin Fields is a very talented quarterback. He's talented. I didn't say he's great. There's a difference. But that's a guy that can make plays. So the Bears and the Packers aren't really being mentioned. They've just kind of been thrown away. And the sexy pick is the Lions. The safe pick is the Vikings. And the South is this, like you said, it's like, who's going to win that bad division? It's got to be the Saints. And the NFC West, nobody's talking about the Cardinals because Kyler Murray's out, torn ACL. They look horrible.
Yeah.
The Rams, nobody talks about them much because they're getting older and they gave away all their draft picks and they sold their soul to the devil and it worked. They won a Super Bowl. So basically all the talk in NFC is wrapped around the Niners, the Eagles, and then there, of course, America's team, the Cowboys, who won 12 games last year, if I remember correctly. And the Giants get a little bit of run, and the Lions are kind of that, like I said, they're kind of the sexy team to talk about because of Dan Campbell's persona. They're on Hard Knocks, I think, last year, and he's likable. And the Lions they can score points. They were one of the best offenses in the league last year. The defense was really bad but got better late in the year. And if the Lions beat the Chiefs at Arrowhead the first game of the season, which I think is a gigantic if, but possible, if they do that, everybody's going to pick them to win the division just like that. So the Lions are kind of the sexy pick with momentum going from last year to this year. And the AFC, to me, has way more Super Bowl contenders, way more. AFC, you could sit here in the AFC, and you can legitimately say to AFC, the Bills could win the Super Bowl with the roster they got. They could make it and win the Super Bowl. Now, some people say, yeah, until you beat the Chiefs, that ain't happening. Well, duh. The Bills, the Jets could make the Super Bowl. You have Aaron Rodgers. You got good running backs. Breece Hall coming back. Dalvin Cook's on there. You got Garrett Wilson, very good wide receiver. Their defense was very good. The question, I think, is their offensive line. But Rodgers usually makes his offensive line better, just like Mahomes does. So there's reason to say that the Jets could make a run to the Super Bowl. I don't think that's insane to say. I think it's a big jump. But listen, we've seen Tom Brady go from one team to another and immediately go to the Super Bowl. So Aaron Rodgers could do the same thing. I'll tell you, the Jets do have a lot of talent on the defensive side of the ball. Deuce Gardner, okay? So they're the Bills can make it. The Jets can make it. The Dolphins certainly have the talent to make it. I think Tua's the issue there, if he can stay healthy. I don't think anybody's going to deny the Ravens have the talent to make it. Mm-hmm. The Bengals obviously do. How many have I given you? Five? The Chiefs obviously is six. And some people will argue the Chargers have the talent to make it. I would say they have the talent. I'm not buying it. That would be seven. And some would even go as far to say the Jaguars can make a deep run. They made the division round. So there's seven or eight teams in the AFC that you got to sit here and say, you know what? All eight have a case that they could make a run to the Super Bowl. And NFC... really, you only come up with three. Cowboys, Niners, and Eagles. And the Cowboys I discard half the time because they always choke in the playoffs. Can you come up with another team in the NFC that you think is a Super Bowl caliber team that's going to get a run to the Super Bowl?
And it's track record because you're not going to bring him up. But if you're bringing up Aaron Rodgers to the Jets, I'll bring up the Vikings because they have the talent to do it.
Yeah.
But maybe track record tells you shouldn't do that. But Aaron Rodgers never did that in Green Bay either. He did it once.
Yeah.
I know he made the NFC Championship game more.
Right, multiple times. The Vikings can't make it the NFC Championship.
Yeah, but it's, you know, if the question is, can this team make a run to the Super Bowl, do they have the talent to do it? I think the Vikings do.
I don't think they got major issues on defense.
I don't think they will, but...
Right.
And I think a lot of those AFC teams... And I would not put the Jets in that on the list that you gave. Mm-hmm. Not yet, anyway. Mm-hmm. but
even without the Jets, I got seven.
Seven, exactly. Yeah, there's still way more in the AFC. I'm not going to say there's not.
And there's only seven spots in the playoffs. Yeah. So somebody said one of the of those eight teams I mentioned all have outstanding quarterbacks. One really good quarterback making a lot of money ain't going to make the playoffs
at least
for
one.
sure. Yes, right. Yeah, if the Steelers steal a playoff spot, that'll take it away from one of those other top flight quarterbacks. The AFC's way deeper.
Oh, yeah.
Way deeper. I go through this for fun because, one, I got to come up with my picks to win another case of pop.
Yeah.
I won 3 years in a row with my buddy, and I'm trying to come up with my sleep. I do like the Seahawks a lot. I do. You're right. I can't pick them a sleeper because they made the playoffs last year. But the Seahawks, I think, are building something. I think they're building something in Seattle. I really do. And if Geno Smith plays close to the way he did last year, they are a serious threat, I think, to the Niners. Because I think they, I'm not sold on Brock Purdy doing this all year. I mean, he played well but last year when he became the starter by default with injuries.
Yeah.
But it's not like he carried the team.
No.
And granted, they've got weapons. Deebo Samuel, Christian McCaffrey, George Kittle, their defense is really good. So he don't have to carry him. But, you know, I didn't think the Niners were going to beat the Eagles in Philadelphia last year with a rookie quarterback. Now, he got hurt right away, and of course they had nobody to play quarterback.
Yeah,
I would still say right now, you know, the Eagles are the favorite, but the Super Bowl loser rarely makes it back. The Chiefs are the exception in the last, I think, 8, 9, 10 years. So if that's the case, then that means you should exclude the Eagles. Now you're down to who? The Cowboys or the Niners? I can make strong cases against both, but then who, if it's not them, who is it, you know?
Yeah, and
maybe it's the Giants. Maybe I'm sleeping on the Giants.
Yeah, and I think that on this discussion, there's so much that goes into your brain and talking about it because of what's happened in the past, right?
Like, right.
But it's easy to, like, put in teams that have never proven anything.
Sure.
But now they're all of a sudden in this discussion.
Yeah. Well, the Lions are just like, they haven't proven anything.
And the Lions would be one of those teams if we would have mentioned them as a possible Super Bowl.
The
Dolphins are obviously one of those teams, right? They still haven't done anything.
No, they haven't.
They've done nothing yet.
You're right.
But we say they have the talent to
do something. Well, the Chargers have not done anything.
The Chargers have done nothing, but we don't want to talk about them because they completely charge. Their history shows that they don't do anything, right? The Dolphins' history says that they don't even get the chance to do anything.
Yeah.
The Chargers do, right? Like, they get the chance to do something, then they blow it.
That's right. They're up 27-0. Nothing last year
against the Jaguars
at home.
Yes, and they blow it when they're, you know, playing the
Chiefs.
When Marty Schottenheimer's about to win a flipping playoff game against the Patriots, they blow it, right?
Yeah.
Like, this is not, that's not even just a new thing with the Chargers. You know, it's like we can go back to older instances where the Chargers are going to charge it. That didn't just start with Justin Herbert, right?
Not.
And so you're looking at all that, and it's like, but we automatically say the Lions or the Dolphins, I mean, could be a Super Bowl contender, but they've never done. Even had the chance to be there. So it's interesting how we perceive how we'll talk about this discussion. I'm not saying one way is right or one way is wrong.
Right.
It is just interesting what teams you might put in there and you might not, just based on their track record.
Listen, based on what you're saying, this is how I would look at it. There are 7 or 8 teams that are certainly capable to make a run to the Super Bowl AFC. The NFC, I think there's only 3 or 4. But if you really, truly wanted to tell me who are the 3 teams, or like, would you dwindle the field down? Yeah, I would.
Absolutely.
Chiefs, Bengals, and Bills. That's it.
Yeah, Chiefs, Bengals, Bills, Eagles, 49ers. That's the list.
Yeah, that's it.
Right now.
That's right, because I got to see it with the
Based
Jets.
Based on history.
I got to see it with the Jets because they got to get a new quarterback and implemented in their system in Aaron Rodgers. I got to see if Tua can stay healthy for a whole year, okay? I got to see Lamar Jackson stay healthy for a whole year, right? I mean, because it's been a couple years since he's done that, and play well in the playoffs when he gets there. And I clearly, Jacksonville, I don't know enough to say they're definitely in the echelon of the Bengals, the Bills, and the Chiefs. And then the Chargers, well, we just said that they haven't won a playoff game with Justin Herbert, and they went up 27-0 at home against Jacksonville, +5 in the turnover category, and somehow found a way to pee that down their leg. So really, you can't obviously say there's 7 or 8 teams certainly talented enough, more teams in the AFC to make a run in the Super Bowl and NFC, but you also could counter that and say, yeah, but there's the 3 teams are on one level, and then there's a lot of teams that are maybe a half a step behind, whereas the NFC, you could say there's 2 or 3 teams, and then there's a full step behind.
Yeah,
does that make sense?
There's 2 ways of having this discussion.
Right.
It's like who,
tiers.
It's who's got the talent to do it, to be a Super Bowl contender,
right.
And there's a a long list of them.
Yeah, especially in the AFC.
But then the other part of it is who's proven that the talent they have actually means something?
The three we said.
And it's the teams that, and I guess the Bills technically haven't proven that yet. They've not made the Super Bowl. The Bengals and Chiefs have, right?
Right.
And the Chiefs have won it, obviously. The Eagles and 49ers have both made the Super Bowl. So if you come down to it in a technicality, the Bills might not be part of this
list. The Bills are 13 seconds away. I think the Bills got to be in there.
From the AFC Championship game.
Yeah, right.
13 seconds away. They made the AFC Championship against the Chiefs the year before. Right. So I get a lot of the argument, but you know, you're going to come down to it, and people are going to discredit a lot of these teams because they haven't proven anything,
right?
Which is, I think, sad in one way, but it's, you know, the safe way to do things in the other way, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's my philosophy on a lot of sports stuff, right?
See it when I
let
believe
me see it.
It,
and then I'll believe you.
Well, we will wait and see. You know,
I'll believe the Denver Nuggets are still the only team that I've been like all in from the start of the season on
that
something
hadn't
I've
proven
not
it.
Seen anything yet.
Yeah.
But, you know, I went with it. That one worked out for me. But I'm sure there's been some other team that I didn't, you know, I hadn't seen it yet that I predicted to win it at the end of the year. But I do. I'm like I've not seen this from Kirk Cousins, but I want to believe that Minnesota, especially after watching quarterback, right? I want to believe that the Vikings could be one of those teams.
On that note, I will believe it when I see it, when Chris Jones is back playing for the Kansas City Chiefs. By the way, we have kicked this around, and you can give us some feedback here if you're interested, and I'll throw it out the next few days. This is not a for sure thing. I threw it out to my youngest, and he told me, what time are we doing this? I said, son, it's just an idea. But Dustin, I talked about this yesterday. We're talking about fantasy football. We could do a fantasy football league. It could be us radio guys, Dusty and me, and I know my 9-year-old is in. And we could have a 10, 12, 14-member league, and we could do it through Yahoo Fantasy Football or whatever site we want to do it. There would be no entry fee, and we could put together a nice package for the winner. It'd be a winner-take-all, but if the radio guys win, you know, so it's kind of, it'd almost be a battle of our listeners versus the radio guys, okay? To see who's better at picking a team, drafting a team. We could do everything like anybody else does. We put together a draft. We can be in front of our computer a certain night and so forth and so on. So if you're listening to this show right now and you would be interested in participating in a fantasy football league because you only have seven others you're in, but if you'd be interested in participating and looking at it as a challenge to, well, Dusty and Wade talk about sports, but you know what? I want to make them look like fools, and I want to crush them in fantasy football.
Just like you do every year when the NCAA tournament breaks.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. So if you're listening right now and you'd be interested in us doing a fantasy football league, no entry fee. It'd be something, obviously, for the winner, winner take all. And you can be, it could be a kid. It could be an adult. It could be a mom, a dad, a woman, a man. It don't matter. Call the station and say I'd be interested. I could take your number, get your email, and if we get enough people that are interested, you know what, I think we could probably do it. Mm-hmm. If we don't have enough people interested, we got other things to worry about, we won't worry about it. So you can call anytime. If we don't answer, leave a voicemail. 545-3220 is the number to call. If you'd want to participate in a fantasy football league where it's the radio guys against everybody else, per se, and we'd have a lot of fun with it. I guarantee we talk about it here and there on the show, too.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're willing to be made fun of a little bit or take shots at us, which I'm sure everybody's willing to do, if you're interested, you can call me now or anytime. 545-3220. Don't answer. Leave a voicemail. 545-3220 and tell me if you'd want to play in a fantasy football league against us radio guys. If there isn't enough interest, we won't worry about it. If there is, then we'll consider doing it.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or SunflowerStateRadio.com.